You are listening to Feminist Current. I'm Megan Murphy. On Saturday, women gathered at Fraser Valley Institution, a prison in Abbotsford, BC, to protest the housing of men in women's prisons. Since Bill C-16 passed in Canada, that's Canada's gender identity legislation, men who identify as transgender have been requesting transfer to female prisons, which endangers female inmates. Yet the Liberal government won't address the problem. The media has avoided, for the most part, covering the implications of this. I spoke with Heather Mason, who organized this event in Abbotsford over the weekend, and who is a founding member of Canadian Women's Sex-Based Rights, COSBAR, and a former prisoner herself, as well as Aaliyah Perini, who spoke at the event, is also a former prisoner and is an advocate for women in prison now, as well as a member of Strength in Sisterhood, SIS. I talked to them about their work and what these inclusion policies mean for women in prison. Thanks for making the time on such short notice, you guys. I really appreciate it.
No problem.
Aaliyah, I wonder maybe if you can just start by telling me a bit about yourself. I don't know you. I know you recently spoke at this event in Abbotsford, which we can talk a bit more about later. But what's your background?
So I'm here from BC originally. I did 5 years back in, I guess it would have been like 2005 to 2010. So I was like in prison before all of this shit happened, really. And since leaving prison, I've done tons of like advocacy. I was actually on a reality TV show in Canada with Kevin O'Leary, and that kind of gave me like a good platform to start speaking on. I got lots of like invites for public speaking. So I've done like quite a bit on like, you know, just prison stuff and all of that. And then I was with the Canadian Association of Elizabeth Fries as a regional advocate for probably 5 years. And I did public speaking for them just as someone with lived experience for about 8 years. And that all ended, I guess, 2 years ago when they passed the policy at the AGM. I was all part of the huge debacle that happened there with the women. And then I guess since then, I've just been, you know, working in the background as much as I can, speaking when I can. I lost my platform leaving CAFES with the public speaking, so I haven't had to do it as much, unfortunately. But
what's CAFES? Sorry to interrupt.
CAFES, it's the Canadian Association of Elizabeth Fry Societies.
Oh, of course. Okay.
Yeah. So, and I like, they gave me a lot of opportunities to speak, but then they made the whole policy change. It was a nightmare at the AGM. They basically silenced a woman with lived experience, and because she was speaking out about sexual assaults and harassment that was happening to her. And so, yeah, I left after that. Since then, like, I'm also a mom. I also build elevators, and I also, yeah, I guess work at Strength at Sisterhood with Heather. We work on that, and yeah, that's kind of me in a nutshell. I've, you know, a quick one.
Yeah, and so what was it that got you talking or speaking out about the issue of men being transferred to female prisons?
Well, I think part of it is I've always been involved in the speaking out for women in prisons. Those women are very voiceless. I remember being one of those voiceless women, and the sexual harassment and whatnot was bad enough just by having male guards in there. And when, you know, this whole thing happened with CAFES, and it was kind of new to our prisons, we were starting to get complaints about these assaults and no one was doing it. It was kind of this, you know, someone had to speak out about it. And yeah, so it was kind of the whole, I guess, seeing a room full of you know, 60 women that are paid professionals to help these women that, and they're representing these women, and they all just, you know, turned their head to this woman that was speaking out about it, and it was disgusting. So I guess, yeah, that kind of sparked it, and then just everything that's happened since, and it's just insane to me to think that we even have to fight for this. But if no one's going to speak about it, then I've always been one to speak out of things that people don't like to hear, so it was kind of up my alley.
Yeah, I relate to that.
Yeah, you know, and it's just crazy to think, like, I don't know, it's just like, you know, it's just fucking crazy that we have to argue that men shouldn't be in there with us. It makes no sense that people think it's okay. And yeah,
it feels really crazy making to even have to say it out loud. Heather, can you, I mean, I know we've talked before. I think I interviewed you maybe a couple of years ago for the YouTube channel, maybe like less than that. Anyway, but you know, for people who don't know you and your activism, tell me a bit about your background and how you got involved in fighting this issue.
Okay. So I was addicted to drugs and I was in and out of jail. And then I ended up receiving a federal sentence and was sentenced to Grand Valley Institution for Women in Kitchener, Ontario for 3 years. And while I was incarcerated there, Bill C-16 was implemented and CSC, Correctional Service of Canada, changed their transfer policy. I wasn't really going to speak out about anything. I just wanted to get my time done and get through everything. I knew what was going on. I was sexually harassed while I was in Grand Valley, but I still kind of thought that I deserved what happened to me and that it was normal. And then, as Aaliyah mentioned, there was the Canadian Association of Elizabeth Fry Society's national AGM, which was in Ottawa, Ontario in June 2019. Mm-hmm. And that's when I first met Aaliyah. And I also was aware, because of that conference, that there was nobody standing up for the women inside. And that was the push that I needed to start speaking out. And since then, I started an organization with some Canadian women called Canadian Women's Sex-Based Rights. And since then, I've just been working with women across Canada and internationally on women and girls' rights while incarcerated.
Okay. And you guys both mentioned this AGM, which seems to be kind of like a turning point for you both. Can you tell me a bit more about what happened there? This was an AGM in 2019 for the Elizabeth Fry Society. Am I getting this right?
Yes. So CAFES, the Canadian Association of Elizabeth Fry's, I kind of look at it like an umbrella. So CAFES is on the top, and then all the E-Fry's are like the spokes. So they're under CAFES membership. So any policies that CAFES pass, the E-Fry's as well have to follow policy.
And E-Fry's are, they run transition houses for women. They help women who are escaping male violence. Is that right?
Yes. So they operate all our halfway houses, so our community residential facilities. And then they also have additional programming for women.
Okay. So what happened at that AGM that kind of triggered you both in terms of really, you know, pursuing and fighting this issue?
For me, it was seeing how upset our sister was, who got up and talked about her experience of being sexually harassed and groomed by a prolific serial pedophile. When I got there, she was extremely upset, crying. And a lot of the other women, because there was a whole bunch of us who had lived experience that were at that AGM, they actually, there was 10 of us that won a scholarship and got our transportation and accommodations paid for to be at that conference. And I was one of the ones that received the scholarship and was funded to go there. So there are several women from across the country, and they were really upset And there was also some CAFES and EFRI staff as well that didn't agree with the inclusion policy, and they were upset. And it was totally divided. It was lived experience against, like, the professionals. And there was just in the room feeling, like, the pressure. There ended up being, like, fighting. So there was a big argument that broke out in one of the rooms, and there was yelling back and forth. Women with lived experience were crying. A lot of us got triggered. We actually left the conference and went back to our accommodation, and they were calling our name on the stage to give us our certificate, and we weren't even there to receive our certificate because we had left because we were upset.
And so this was about, like, you know, essentially, so the professionals, as you say, you called them, were advocating an inclusion policy of allowing men into the women's spaces. Is that correct?
Yes. So they're funded by public safety. So they're on contract with Correctional Service of Canada. So essentially what they did is they just followed through with whatever corrections said. And they wouldn't make any accommodations or amendments to their inclusion policy that put women, like, prioritized women over people who identified as women. There was no middle ground. It was just, this is what we're doing, and we don't care if you agree or not. And if you don't agree, then we're going to push you out, and you're going to leave.
You know, so this event sort of triggered you both, I'm thinking, because it was, you know, women aren't being listened to, essentially, and it's like, and the women who aren't being listened to are the vulnerable women, which is so ironic, I think, because this issue is framed around protecting the supposedly vulnerable. You know, it's the trans-identified males, who they refer to as trans women, who are said to be super marginalized, and this is why they need to be allowed into women's shelters and women's prisons and women's change rooms and things like that. And meanwhile, these women like you two, who, you know, and many more women who actually have lived experience, have been incarcerated, have been, you know, marginalized and vulnerable. And you guys are saying, you know, this is dangerous to have men being housed with women, and you are the ones being silenced and marginalized yet again.
Well, yes, it's easy to pass policy that doesn't impact you, right?
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
Okay, so you recently organized an event in Abbotsford, BC, of course, at the Fraser Valley Institute for Women, to protest men being housed in women's correctional facilities. And Aaliyah, you were in that prison, that facility. Is that correct, at some point?
Yeah, I spent my, I did a 5-year sentence in that facility there.
Okay. When was that?
That was from 2005, and I was released in 2009.
Mm. And, you know, so what's happening at that facility that triggered you both to protest, to organize this event and to speak?
Well, again, the fact that there's 5 males inside the institution right now is a huge thing that doesn't sit very well. And again, we know how voiceless those women are in there. The women right now are scared to even speak out, when especially places like the Elizabeth Fry Society are the only place they can get their parole to. That's only halfway houses that accept women. And if they speak out for that, they're scared of being punished. They're scared of the cliques that the men in jail are creating. It's just really, you know, awful dynamic. So when Heather said she was coming out here, I obviously jumped on board as soon as I heard that.
Mm-hmm. And so you say, so there's 5 men in that facility right now. And do all of those men identify as women?
Yes. So there's Tara DeSouza. Tara is the only one that's actually had a sex change. Tara DeSouza is the one that raped 3-month-old baby and caused so much damage the baby had to have reconstructive surgery. And then there's also Fallon Aubrey, who's a contract killer. That was the first transfer in Canada based on gender identity. So that was the first fully intact male to be transferred into a woman's prison. There's also Frank, who goes by Frankie. And then there's a Brie Armstrong and a Coco Tallulah. So as far as I'm aware, they're all lifers, besides Frank. Frank is a bank robber serving about 14 years, I believe. So they all have long sentences. But Fraser Valley for Women is a small institution. It holds 92 women, and 5 of them are trans. So that means that equals 5.4% of the population already.
Crazy. And Fraser Valley also has a mother-child program that's going to be seriously affected by the fact that there's men with these kind of charges in there.
Mm-hmm. And have there been incidences in that prison in terms of sexual harassment, sexual assault, things like that, on, you know, from these men who are being housed there?
Yes. So what people don't realize as well is we're aware of what toxic relationships look like on the outside, but those toxic relationships are also going on inside, and it's like complex dysfunctional systems of abuse, right? So the men have this power and control over the women, and there's cliques forming around these men, and it's pitting women against each other. So there was an incident where Frankie's girlfriend was put in isolation or segregation for a few days. And while Frankie's girlfriend was in isolation, he was trying to get with other women on the compound. They said no. And then when Frankie's girlfriend got out, he was like, yeah, they were trying to sleep with me. So it's causing a lot of lateral violence as well with the women. And also the women who are being preyed on are scared to tell because of retaliation and being labeled as a rat. So they allow what is happening to go on. There's also incidents with like the mother-child program where like D'Souza and at the time Matthew Harkes was also at Fraser Valley, where they would hang out around the mother-child house and antagonize the women and stare at them. And then if the women said anything, then they were told they were bullying. There was also physical altercations. There's also men walking around in nightgowns with their penis in full view. There's a lot of different issues that are going on in there.
They're handing out the morning after pill in our women's prison. Why would you need that, right? Mm-hmm. You know, it's fucked.
Mm-hmm. So how does Bill C-16 connect to all this? I mean, the thing that was so, you know, strange, I guess, to me about that bill was that it was pretty vague. So obviously, it, you know, for those listening who may not know, the bill, this was our gender identity legislation, and it incorporated gender identity and gender expression into the Human Rights Code and the Criminal Code. But, it didn't explicitly say anything, it didn't outright say, now males who identify as trans must be housed in women's prisons or shelters or whatever. But, has that been the result? Are these men being housed in these prisons because of Bill C-16?
Yes. So prior to the passing of Bill C-16, you had to have had surgery in order to be transferred to a woman's prison. And which is interesting is that Correctional Service of Canada wasn't even going to implement a transfer policy based on gender identity. So once Bill C-16 passed, they reevaluated their transfer policy and their transgender criteria. And prior, you had to be living outside of prison for 1 year in order to qualify to have gender reassignment surgery. Well, they amended that and made it so that you could be inside a facility for 1 year and be able to get the surgery required. So they went to implement that policy December 27th, 2019. Shortly after, Justin Trudeau had a town hall meeting where a trans woman got up and said, well, what about gender identity and being housed by your gender? Justin Trudeau was like, oh, didn't think about that. We'll fix it. Next thing you know, Correctional Service of Canada was amending their policy again, and they changed it so that transfers happened based on gender identity or expression. So now you don't even need to identify as a woman. You could go by they, them pronouns and be non-binary and still request a transfer into a woman's prison.
Crazy. Have you managed to engage any politicians on this issue? You know, like, what does Justin Trudeau have to say about all this?
Justin Trudeau will not speak on the issue at all. Pretty much no liberals will speak on it. I had one meeting with a liberal MP, and they kind of took over the meeting with the sex work is sex work and tried to get me on board with that. So they weren't even interested in the whole prison aspect. My MP is liberal. She ignored me for about 2 years before she got a pile on the internet. She finally got a hold of me and then just dropped off the face of the earth again. There are some conservative MPs that I've interviewed with, also who gave me the heads up on the standing committee, so I was able to get a brief in. And other than that, the only party that is in support of not having males transfer into women's prisons is the People Party of Canada.
And do they have a position on this, the People's Party of Canada?
I believe they do. They are in support of women having the right to their own safe spaces, like in sports, shelters, prisons, etc.
Okay. And Alia, what's been your experience trying to talk to people about this and to get, you know, politicians and people in power to pay attention to what's going on and how this impacts vulnerable women?
Well, to be honest, you know, a huge example was I was actually at the AGM that the Canadian Association of Elizabeth Fry had. And I was hoping that out of the room of 60, like I said, you know, workers, their support workers that are paid to help women, that they'd listen. So when they didn't, the woman was ushered out and these professionals were saying things like, oh, they need to be educated, and that's so transphobic, and things like that. So since then, I've tried to, you know, reach out to as many, I guess, like service workers as I can. And it's honestly the same thing. You either don't get replied, you are labeled transphobic. You know, I've had many people just delete me and won't even, like, you know, see on the level of, like, field as me. I've reached out to a couple people in BC and the government here that I actually, like, knew kind of personally through all of this that somewhat supported me being, you know, an advocate for these women and all of that. I've reached out to two, actually, and both of them I just got deleted off of everything, and I've never, and I didn't get a reply. So I kind of, you know, you're kind of, our voices aren't heard. And yeah, it's, you know, it's pretty, hasn't been very successful, I guess.
I mean, it's just so maddening because, you know, the people who are ignoring you, you know, like the Liberal Party, the NDP, I know has completely ignored this issue. And, you know, and they're also the ones who are supporting these bills and policies and legislation to allow men to, you know, essentially do whatever they want, you know, be transferred into like any women's space they wish if they identify as trans. These are the people who claim to be, you know, progressive, to care about women. Like, you know, Trudeau frames himself as a feminist and, you know, meanwhile, they're totally silencing women and throwing women under the bus.
That's exactly it, right? Like these women are representing women, but they're putting men's priorities and feelings over women's actual safety, and it blows my mind.
So Heather, you submitted a briefing document to the Standing Committee on Public Safety and National Security about this issue, and can you tell me a bit about that? You know, is there an investigation going on right now in terms of this issue of men being transferred to female prisons?
So I was tipped off by actually the shadow minister for Bill Blair, public safety, that there was a standing committee meeting, and they were meeting in regards to the Office of the Correctional Investigators report that was put out. There's three areas that they were looking at. And the Office of the Correctional Investigator highlighted how sexual abuse is not being documented in the prisons, like regarding like staff on staff, like inmate on inmate, staff and inmate, etc. So I used that avenue to be able to fit in a brief about what was going on in the women's prisons. So I don't know if you're aware, but I put out a survey a couple months ago, and I've been sending it out to women with lived experience, and they've been filling it out, and I've been providing an honorarium. So I'm collecting all this data from the women, and I'm going to put out a summary of the results. But I incorporated a lot of what I was being told into the brief. So I put in there how many women had reported that they were sexually assaulted or sexually harassed or groomed, and what was going on inside. So the brief is available online. It's about 10 pages. And then I also added an Appendix A with a spreadsheet that I've been keeping track of all the males who identify as women and where they are, what their crimes are, and if they're applying for transfer.
Great. I'm glad to hear that somebody's doing this work. It sounds like it's an incredible amount of work.
Yes, and there's been approximately 70 women or so that have been filling out this survey. So there's a lot of information that I've received from women that are inside and women that are outside. And another thing, too, is I emailed this survey to all the halfway houses in Canada, and only about one or two even told their clients about it and had them fill it out and send it back to me. The rest have completely ignored it and will not provide it to their clientele.
So you both spoke at this event that you organized in Abbotsford on the weekend, is that right?
Yes.
Yeah, and tell me, what was the response to that protest?
I was very happy with the turnout. There is a lot of support. There is a lot of support from the traffic going by, as well as the employees that were going into the complex, because where we protested, there's actually three federal prisons on that land. There's two men's and one women's. So there's a lot of correctional officer traffic as well, and visitors. And they were really like thumbs up and recording it. And oh my gosh, I got to tell my daughter. And so it was really receptive.
Okay, that's good to hear. And I wonder, Aaliyah, did I just say that wrong again? Oh my God.
That's okay.
What is it? What's the right?
Aaliyah, sorry.
Aaliyah. I wonder, you know, what are you recommending happen? Like, how do you think that we should be dealing with trans-identified people in prisons?
Well, prior to the bill and all these changes, when, you know, trans people had to have operations before, I was in prison then with three, I guess, trans people. And there wasn't no rape issues. They weren't even violent, to be honest. So I would, you know, I guess there's no real answer except for I'd like to see that there's no men inside our prisons ever. You know, whether that, you know, solution is reversing what they've done, or, you know, obviously they're not going to reverse the whole bill, so an amendment. But I guess, yeah, I am like prepared to keep talking and till all these assaults stop and the women are, you know, as much as I'm an abolitionist and I don't even believe women should be serving their sentences in jail, I, you know, in the meantime, want them to be safe and free of, you know, these assaults and harassment from men.
Of course, totally. So you think, like, do you think there is a possibility that, you know, we could advocate for an amendment to Bill C-16 that would say, essentially, you know, if you're male, that's, you're in a men's prison, that's it. There's no options. It doesn't matter if you have surgery. It doesn't matter how you identify.
Yeah, you know, I think there could be something that could be worked out. They need some sort of amendment that where, you know, women's safety is prioritized over the identification of your gender in a way. And there's no way there should be a penis in the prison. You know, even having like male guards was sketchy enough while I was in there. So now having, you know, like Heather was saying, the dynamic change just with men in there and that power, like it has to go. You know, for years we advocated for all these safer spaces for women. We shut down the women in the men's jails, and we built these women's prisons so that it could be a whole different model. We were trying to get away for years, you know, from the male correctional model, and we're just reversing right back into it. And, you know, I just feel like, you know, all my prior years of advocating for this is just right gone, because we're right back to square one with the safety of the women. And, you know, that's really what some sort of amendment needs to be, is the priority of the safety of them.
Yeah. And so, and what have you been demanding, Heather?
So a lot of people argue, well, if they've had surgery, then they'll be okay. But all you have to do is look at Matthew Harkes, who's a prolific serial pedophile with over 60 victims and 200 offenses. Harkes has had surgery and is still the number one predator in women's halfway houses and prisons.
He's had genital surgery?
Yes. And Harkes actually sexually assaulted a woman in the bathroom at Grand Valley Institution, and was also grooming another woman and sexually harassed two of my other friends. So having surgery does not take the pedophile out of you. Mm. And also I wanted to mention too, which is a big concern here, and Aaliyah touched on it, is that women's prisons used to be set up exactly like men's. We had one women's federal prison in Canada, and that was prison for women in Kingston, Ontario. And within a 3-year period, 7 women committed suicide because they couldn't handle the living environment there and the restrictive environment, no programs, being displaced by location away from their families and children. So there was actually a task force on federally sentenced women that began and put out a report called Creating Choices, where they is the foundation of women's corrections. So women's 6 women's prisons were made as a result of this report, where it's like communal living, less security. We don't have like the gun towers and the 40-millimeter gas launchers. We no longer have men's sites deployed to women's sites. There are so many differences now. And with the transfer from the men into the women's prisons, it's increasing security, because a lot of the transfer requests are coming from maximum security. And what people are not aware is, yes, women's prisons and men's prisons have 3 different security classifications. So minimum, medium, and maximum. But that's where it ends. Men's security measures for those classifications are more than what the women's are. So for example, they have a risk assessment tool that is used to classify people. And they took the classification tool for men, it was designed for white men, and they applied it to women and found that women do not cover all 3 security classifications. So basically what they did was they shrunk this down so that women would fit in all 3 levels. So if you were to take the women and apply them to the men, you would find that our security risk falls just under medium security classification of the men. So when you're transferring in supermax, max, and medium men, their security risk is more than what the women are inside. So the guards have actually been, and they protested outside of the prison for women in Quebec, wanting an increase in security. So now we're resorting back to men's prisons. Why do women have to resort back to something that has been found to not work? Because they want to accommodate these men. And the issue that we're having is that, yes, there are some transfers that are being denied, but the men are really good with utilizing legal avenues. So they're using the complaint system through Correctional Service of Canada, which is the grievance system. And then they're escalating their complaints and actually bringing it to the Human Rights Commission or the tribunal. And they're either winning their, if they do win their cases, it opens the door for all the rest to transfer in, and we'll have the same issue that the United States is having right now. Because currently they are denying some transfers because the former Deputy Commissioner for Women reported in 2019 that 50% of the transfer requests were coming from sex offenders. So my issue here is right now we're picking and choosing. Even with the picking and choosing, Correctional Service of Canada cannot keep the women safe. This policy is one-sided, as females who identify as men are denied transfer due to overriding health and safety concerns. So this policy is only for males who still have their penis. A solution to this would be, and there is room, men's institutions have extra room. They have dorms, wings, pods, etc. So we wouldn't need to build more prisons, but we could take a section of the men's prison and utilize it for trans wings. And then the environment can be tailored to meet their unique needs, needs that are different than women's. And then we won't be downloading 100% of the risk of male violence from men's prisons onto women. Then they will have more safety. They will have the clothes and the makeup and all that type of stuff that they're requesting. And also, it now protects the trans women who don't want to transfer, because everyone's forgetting that there is 63% of trans women who do not want to transfer to women's prisons. They want to stay in men's prisons. Nothing has been done for their safety or accommodation in the men's prisons.
And I think that despite the fact that, you know, the Liberals and Justin Trudeau is totally ignoring this issue, I think this actually is an issue that Canadians really do care about, especially, you know, I'm sure a lot of Canadians aren't even aware that this is happening. You know, I've been talking about this for a while, especially since I talked to you, Heather, and you told me, you know, the reality of what was going on in these prisons. And a lot of people that I say this to are totally shocked. You know, obviously the media doesn't cover it for the most part. I think there's been a few reporters to kind of touch on it, but for the most part, the Canadian media is just, you know, just like the Liberals, too scared to touch the issue, and is just going to, you know, let women suffer rather than, you know, maybe face some kind of controversy. But how can Canadians get involved and advocate around this issue?
Well, they can definitely help out with the protests. Also contacting like Keep Prisons Single Sex, Women Matter Canada, We the Females, COSBAR, even the Women's Human Rights Campaign. Like, we all kind of speak with each other. So signing up for like newsletters and keeping in touch with us to find out like next steps on what they can do. We are also planning like a day of action for women's prisons. So there's 6 women's prisons in Canada, and we're going to protest at all 6 of them at the same time on the same day. So that does give an opportunity for a lot of people in Canada to come out and support women in prison.
When is that happening?
Before the election. We haven't released the date yet, but it is coming up very soon.
Right. So now that we have an election coming up very quickly, thanks to Trudeau, it's really time to act on this, I think, eh?
Mm-hmm. Yes. It's a shit show. Like, all the women who are contacting me, those are their words. It's a shit show, Heather. It's not the same. You wouldn't believe what's going on inside. Also, I just got threatened by one of the trans individuals that is incarcerated in the women's prison. So they sent an urgent message to let me know that they're out in 4 months and that I better stop talking about them and remove any information on the internet that I put about them, or they're going to sue me and they have more money and friends than me and I'm going to regret it.
Yeah, I mean, there is a reality that when women start talking about this issue, they face a lot of threats and harassment. Have you experienced any of this, Aaliyah?
No threats and harassment. Definitely, you know, the terms, you're a TERF, transphobe, all of that. I guess if I could add anything, it's just if anybody, you know, like I said, that's, you know, representing women, being paid to represent women, that, you know, might, you know, hear this, to, you know, step up and do your job and to realize that, you know, these women's safety is very important, and that it, again, if you're not going to step up and do it, then to step down and let some organizations that are willing to help these women.
Okay, well, thank you both for all your hard work and your courage. I'm really grateful to you both, and thank you for your time for talking with me today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks a lot for, you know, giving us a platform to speak. That's solid.
You just heard an interview with Aaliyah Perini and Heather Mason. To learn more about their work, visit causebar.ca, that's CAWSBAR.ca, or strengthinsisterhood.net. That is all the time we have for today. I'm Megan Murphy. Thanks for tuning in to Feminist Current. You can find us online at feministcurrent.com, tweet at us at feministcurrent, or send us an email at info@feministcurrent.com. We are hosted by Libsyn, and you can subscribe to the Feminist Current podcast anywhere you like to listen. iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Pocket Cast, TuneIn, Spotify, and beyond. You can even give us 5 stars and a review on iTunes. Feminist Current is produced and hosted by myself, Megan Murphy, out of Vancouver, BC. If you enjoyed this podcast, consider making a donation to support our work. Just visit feministcurrent.com and click the donate button.